We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now. And support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for joining for another Blunt Business here on CannabisRadio.com. Appreciate all of you joining us, finding the show as you have found it, maybe through our YouTube channel on Cannabis Radio's YouTube channel, through Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, YouTube Music, or iHeartRadio, and all major podcast platforms, and of course, CannabisRadio.com and the Cannabis Radio app. And today's program, brought to you by the Buzz CRM, it's an all-in-one solution. Let me tell you, Cannabis Radio, the folks here in the studios, we are using it, an all-in-one solution with over 500 tools to manage every aspect of your marketing with effortless automation. AI right now handling your email, social media, and even customer inquiries 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with a chatbot widget, personalized workflows, streamlining your processes, and nurturing leads with customized automation, omni-channel reach, data-driven decisions, so much more. No matter what kind of business you have, the Buzz CRM has you covered with a single affordable plan, and you can get a free trial right now. Go ahead and find out how the Buzz CRM will give you more bang for your buck and boost your marketing ROI. If you need to pause the episode, just go right now to thebuzzcrm.com, sign up, and come on back. So Blunt Business Day is going to be a little bit different. We're going to go ahead and focus, given the election, the general election for president and a major other number of initiatives, ballot amendments, among other things that are going on. We're going to go ahead and talk about with my next guest. He is Vice President of Marketing and External Affairs and Deputy General Counsel at Dutchy. We're actually going to have Dutchy on the program. It's been a long time coming. A leading cannabis tech company, he focuses on advocating for cannabis policy reforms, particularly around federal legalization and banking access, and also emphasizing the importance of political support for the industry. I'm here with Brian Barish. Brian, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me. Really excited to be here on Cannabis Radio, and yeah, super excited to jump into it.
Yeah, so glad I got to talk about it, because, I mean, we do hear Dutchy's name quite a bit, especially in our Cannabis Roundup program, because always some of the fact of, what platform do you use? And I can't tell you how many times I hear the word Dutchy, because a lot of states are into it, and then you are available in various markets, and we know that a lot of people are using Dutchy, so really glad you're going to have your team on here to go and talk, and especially your expertise, because you've had been asked about quite a bit things when it comes to politics and just necessarily where cannabis is going to be going for legalization and any other relief that we might get from Congress or Washington, D.C. in general to see where we are with that. because there's a lot of things that are coming up that we're going to go and focus on extensively. And of course, I want to go and be able to talk about a new platform, Dutchy 2.0. We want to definitely go and focus on that today. But first off, the 2024 presidential election, cannabis legalization, maybe we haven't heard a whole lot about it, but it is something that's important because there are two candidates that are going to be coming in that will possibly have a different sway on possibly leading a charge, if possible, if Congress is able to get a bill up in front to bring legalization up to the forefront. Now, first of all, we have Vice President Kamala Harris, who's been a strong advocate for federal cannabis reform. She has co-sponsored the MORE Act, aiming to decriminalize cannabis and expunge nonviolent cannabis convictions. We've talked about that extensively. Also, her focus is addressing on social justice issues and the disproportionate impact of cannabis laws on marginalized communities. So we know the MORE Act has been one direction that has been a bill that's been possible to put in front of Congress. Former President Donald Trump has shifted towards state-level cannabis legalization, emphasizing that states should have the right to determine their own cannabis policies. He's highlighted the economic and medicinal benefits of legalization, particularly in battleground states like Florida. While he previously maintained a hands-off approach during his presidency, he has shown a more open stance on cannabis reforms as he courts voters in key states. And that's the idea of this broader public sentiment where cannabis, we know there is a large support for cannabis across the country. Well, that's why we have so many states that are still green lit. And later on in the program, we'll talk about the state-by-state initiatives that are coming in to see more states being green lit for medical or adult use. So in my opinion, Brian, I'll say this first off, and then we'll go on to questions, but yeah. I do believe, well, I'll ask you about this right now anyway, no matter what comes in, whoever's going to come into the Oval Office, I believe that federal response to legalization will not happen for at least 3 to 5 years unless there is a definitive House and Senate majority. Where do you think the time frame is for legalization if we see it at all? You know, would we see it in either of these administrations for 4 years, or is that kind of a pipe dream right now?
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. I appreciate you having me on, Jorge. And
sure.
Just want to mention, you know, you talked about hearing about folks using the platform a lot. It's not surprising to me. Dutchy is, you know, the preeminent player in cannabis tech. We're in over 6,500 stores in the U.S. and Canada, over $22 billion in revenue processed every year. So we get used by a lot of the industry, and we're here for the industry. You know, we're also the only tech company that's at these tables. We're leading board members of the United States Cannabis Council. We co-founded the Coalition for Cannabis Scheduling Reform. So we're deeply involved in these policy levels at the highest levels of government, just to sort of frame that for you. And, you know, look, we're in every legal cannabis state. As you know, more and more states legalize every year. More and more people say they support legalization every year. We see support growing with people who are 65 and over. Every year, as more people medical cannabis and see its benefits. So, you know, frankly, the policymakers are catching up to where the populace is, right? The voters are already there. And I think we're seeing that in this election cycle. I think 3 to 5 years for policy reform, I think that's on the longer side. Something's going to break soon, we think. We've been working really hard on rescheduling. That's very close. The final piece that has to happen procedurally is coming up in December with a hearing before a administrative law judge. We're hoping that goes smoothly and we have a final decision. At this point, you know, probably early next year would be the hope. It's unfortunate for people who are hoping not to pay 280E taxes in 2024, but I think there's a lot of hope for 2025. And then, you know, we'll see where we go from there. I think it's very clear from this election, as you said, both presidential candidates, right, going way beyond what their party has said before. We're seeing they're the ones who are most close to the political calculus here, what is winning over voters, especially those undecided irregular voters. And this is a winning issue. We know this is a winning issue. We see it happening with the campaigns. They're fighting over voters. They're particularly fighting over Black men right now. And we're seeing, you know, very clear signals that a population that is being contested for this election. This is an issue that moves people. This is an issue that gets people to vote for your party. And so we're hoping we see even more of this, and eventually that leads to federal reform.
And also let's make the point that their policymakers, it's pretty much split because you have bipartisanship on this as well. When you look at not just the MORE Act that Obviously, the Senator Schumer, Wyden, Booker were all behind as well, along with Kamala Harris on this matter. You have the States Act that was put out by Elizabeth Warren and Cory Gardner, a bipartisan bill. And, you know, you also had Nancy Mace also putting in some legislation as well to try to get cannabis put forward. And also, the attempt by Congress, I'm always going to give credit, they try to put into the National Defense Authorization Act, for the Safe Banking Act at least, trying to push that forward, has gone through various House committees, you know, the last few years. So we know that it all has been put in place. There's been attempts, no doubt about it, but it is one of those things where I feel like a supermajority of Congress with a clean bill. And that's the other problem, too, is that it's a long story issue about these omnibus, these bills that have been put on where you just can't go ahead and issue and propose straight bills. They have to always be added with something else. And that's always been a large problem I always felt with Congress, where you can't get a bill at its 1,000 pages and you're expect to get, you know, even if you get it, you know, a week before or 2 weeks before, it's just so much of being added to it. You don't get a chance to read the fine print. And that's one of those things that I always had a big contention about anyway. But now let's go into what each candidate has already said so far, that we already have known a little bit more into details into what's going on here. So again, we talked about that if it was Kamala Harris that's looking to go ahead and make it into the White House, her issues would be to address social issues, and federal legalization would be the issue, and more of a decriminalization as a conduit for that approach. For Donald Trump, it would be more of a state-by-state approach, really just not touching what's being done, but just, I guess, in a federal blanket of oversight, you know, across the process. Yep. But now, you've highlighted yourself as well that you feel that Kamala Harris has a stronger stance on legalization compared to President Biden, once we had that change of who was going to go ahead and run for president on the Democratic side, stressing her commitment to full legalization as a significant shift in federal attitudes. So what are the potential advantages or challenges on each approach without either going, if you saw a state-by-state approach being put in place and we just kept going where we are, get to as many states as possible, and then allow interstate commerce, you know, allow where people can go ahead and have, where there's a decriminalization in that respect as well. Maybe there's not dispensaries or medical treatment centers in every state, but people can still have access to cannabis where they are. Or if you have it where it's a federal legalization and everybody gets covered anyway. What do you say?
Yeah. I mean, look, I just first want to start by saying, you know, we appreciate how far President Biden has already moved the ball forward, right? Like, right. The first major federal reform that was initiated at the administrative level, frankly, the first acknowledgement that the war on drugs was wrong and people shouldn't be in jail for it, you know, came from President Biden, and then he initiated the rescheduling process. And you're exactly right. Now Kamala Harris is going even further. She's calling for full legalization, which she supported for many years in her political career, which we appreciate. And you have President Trump, who has gone from, rescinding the Cole memo and creating some uncertainty in the space, you know, through his attorney general, to, being a vocal supporter of the Florida ballot question, being supportive of the Safe Banking Act, and indicating that he would support rescheduling. So, you know, I think there will be a difference in approach. That being said, I think many of us see both presidential candidates looking much more rosy in terms of them advocating for finishing rescheduling and passing a Safe Banking Act as short-term solutions. And then the question will be what comes next. And I think you're right there. You know, the Democrats have looked at a more comprehensive, MORE Act type of approach. The Republicans have clearly looked at a STATES Act type of approach where they're just saying, you know, we're gonna green light what the states are doing and say, you know, in states where it's legal, the federal government is officially calling it legal, and vice versa in states that aren't. So, you know, I think both approaches are meaningful and worth discussing. And there's frankly a lot to talk through when we get into that conversation for real about, you know, what happens with interstate commerce, what happens with which federal agency regulates it, what should be regulated federally per state. So there are a lot of those details to work out as we get into this conversation, and we're excited to have it.
And the part is, too, is that I think for President Biden, I think, well, he will get always credit for the fact that the HHS under his administration decided to approach the DEA to reschedule. That's a very important stance. And I think it's one of the few things of relief that, you know, either Congress or from Washington, D.C. that we can get from a federal level that is very important. And I think to get to that fruition, to have the 280E distinction pulled away, that revenue 10-15% to go and come back to businesses to reinvest or however they want to go and use that, I would say also take some of that towards compliance. those areas are important. And I think where the one thing I can say is that I think that President Biden has also been getting a lot of, you know, a lot of acknowledgement from his senators at the state level from what they have seen. Obviously, we've heard from Senator Schumer of New York saying, you know, talking to Politico, saying about the fact that when he saw what Colorado did, you know, in their initial 10 years of being legalized and seeing that, thinking that crime was going to go through the roof as a result, did not. So his stance changed. Then, you know, Senator Booker and Senator Harris at their times, I think they also looked at it as a chance for, you know, upward advancement for minorities and underrepresented communities, also taking people that are been criminally disenfranchised and also getting them expunged of their records. I think also, you know, the thought that President Biden did try to go and expunge federal cannabis convictions, it's only a small portion that really are really going to benefit from that. But at least that and at least was something that can be said that was, you know, a good faith gesture, I would say. I mean, at least it's something there. And I want to give credit where that's all done. And now, you know, we're going back over to President Trump, former President Trump, you know, as you said, there was a lot of hesitation because he did have his Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded the Obama-era Cole memo that granted many cannabis businesses a sense of security and, you know, left things alone. You know, as a matter of, you know, major adult use markets did light up. You had California, Illinois, and Massachusetts. Also, adult use, to be a recreational marijuana legalization through New York State as well. So all that happened under his watch. But again, 100%. I know he spoke publicly about the fact that he would, you know, if there was a bill to be passed, that he would consider it. I don't think 100%. He would go ahead and look away from the bill. Even the same thing with Governor Ron DeSantis. Once Florida, I believe, is going to go and pass Amendment 3, which will allow adult use cannabis, I voted already for it, and I voted yes. I think, you know, one thing is, I think is, you know, warranting the fact of, you know, safety for children and keeping it out of hand of children. I totally agree with that. But I don't think he's going to go and do anything about not signing the bill. I mean, it just, when medical came in the same place, he didn't do anything but sign it. I think they just, you know, they'll see that the people have spoken, and I can see on both levels where it goes now. Nope. For the industry expansion.
I want to say,
yeah, go ahead.
One other quick thing, you know, I want to give credit where credit's due. He also did provide clemency to some cannabis prisoners and actually got some people out of jail. So it's worth giving him credit for that as well.
Right. The I forget the act that he did that was really to, and it was for a lot of disenfranchised prisoners that were brought in for various criminal convictions that were drug based. And yeah. Exactly that. You. So it is not as if, and this is the part where this is the breakaway from, you know, get the signal from the noise, right? The noise that's going on from, you know, media outlets, because they're looking for clickbait. They're trying to go in. There might be a tabloidistic sense of how some people might, you know, do things where it's emoting emotions. I came from journalism. I'm not happy with the way journalism is. My thing is now, you know, to even find information like this, I have to go to 5-10 different sources. And most likely I'm not going to a major news outlet to find this information. I have to go to the very everywhere else and do my own research. But that's another story for another day. But now, with this, if President Trump were to return to office, is there anything you see that cannabis businesses should prepare for concerning the ongoing DEA rescheduling process? I think at the same time, I don't know if anybody's going to really touch that. And personally, with the DEA rescheduling, you know, we already have the information from all the, what is it? I forget how many scientists that have already proven that cannabis has various, you know, positive effects. So there was that report brought into play. I don't think there's anything going to be stopping that. It's just a matter of when. But the thing is, we've had a delay in getting that finalization.
I think that's right. I mean, I think in terms of what should cannabis companies prepare for, you know, if it's happening in the next presidential term, you know, the logic says there's not as much time pressure.
Right.
So, you know, we'll have to see how each presidential candidate will approach it. You know, one thing we'll want to watch closely if it's President Trump is, does he feel that the process as it exists has been sufficient, or does he feel like he needs to put his own process in place to finalize that? And what's the timeline for that? I think that's, you know, the interesting question there. And then with Vice President Harris, it's a question of, you know, does she just get it done, finish it up in, let's say, January or February, or is there some, you know, additional delay that we're not anticipating?
Plus, the other thing, too, is that I think about, you know, if you want to figure out the approaches of which either presidential candidate could go with, we already see that there's already kind of a bit of a Democratic direction on how states have already implemented that are democratically governed. You see how those states are run and what will be managed and what you can expect from those. Meantime, you see what, you know, more Republican governed states will do in terms of, you know, really, you know, if social equity is going to be more important of a factor or not. If you look at the state of Florida, you know, we have a lot of MSOs that are able to go and come in where mom and pops kind of are not going to be so prominent, but you know, you're going to have those MSOs. You would hope that will be, and I believe they're being very responsible and compliant. And, you know, the transition to adult use should be pretty seamless, I think, because, you know, the storefronts are rebuilding and the regulations are going to have to go ahead to themselves. And hopefully they will go above and beyond what compliance issues are brought on board. And I think the state of Florida also needs to make sure that once they make the transition, that they also look at the compliance issues and make sure those standards are not bare minimum, but bring those up. Because I think some states might not have brought in such a high barrier to entry for compliance. And I think those have had to be needed to be continued to change. Plus, also with both candidates, you have to also figure out the fact that something's got to be done because there's an illicit market. And in some states, it's obviously more than half of the revenue that comes in for cannabis. That's got to get quashed as well. But that's where we need significant help from Congress to make sure that illicit market can be taken down by allowing cannabis businesses to be able to operate with as much financial help and with as much as they can do to be able to freely go ahead and go supply and demand with their customers.
Sure. No, I mean, I think that, you know, there's clearly a distinction there. I mean, you know, what we're seeing in different states is, you know, what we call laboratory democracy, right? So we're seeing different approaches being taken. We're seeing different attempts to see how can you support businesses? How can you create diversity and vibrancy in the industry? And of course, that's always pitched against how quickly can you provide access to cannabis? And frankly, from our experiences with state regulators, I would say that's been one of the missing pieces of this conversation is, you know, are we prioritizing access first? Because there's been a few states where I think with their intentions in the right place, we've seen a much slower ability of the market to grow. Sometimes we've seen the illicit market grow in its place. We've seen intoxicating hemp playing a significant role in its place. And so, you know, for me, the thing I always preach to regulators is let's get it right. Let's make sure that your policy goals are achieved through rolling out a new market, whether that's a new medical market for the first time or a new adult use. But let's center, you know, patient and recreational access first, because that's the whole reason voters and legislators are putting these programs in the place in the first place, right? Is access to the product.
Yeah. And also in the words of Rowarius Marcus, that if we are going to have cannabis be part of helping out in terms of a social equity perspective, that, you know, that entry into social equity and for those that decide to become entrepreneurs to come into the space because of minority guidelines or a disenfranchisement guidelines, a second chance for those that are trying to go ahead and make a life for themselves and build, you know, a career for themselves. You also want to make sure there's no corruption within, because we've seen quite a bit of that and the various social equity issues that we've gotten a chance to talk about here on Blunt Business, that, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, in various markets, you have things where then MSOs get the advantage because the social equity license will get defaulted because there's a various loan or people that are not very business savvy, not realizing what they're getting themselves into. And seeing that come into play, it's those kind of things all together that have to be cleaned up. But that's where, you know, cannabis as an industry can only police itself. We need some relief from the federal level in some ways.
I agree with that. I'll say this, though. You know, I really want to warn people who are thinking about getting into the industry. If you think it's, I just need to get a license and then, you know, I'm going to be a millionaire no matter what I do.
Right.
You know, maybe that existed in like the first few months of legalization in some states, but that world's gone. You know, there's no magic lottery ticket here. You're going to be up against serious business owners. You're going to be up against small business owners who figure it out and are really savvy and find a niche. You're going to be up against multi-state operators who have, you know, serious operations, have figured out operational efficiency, have people with deep retail experience from other markets. And so, you know, finding your niche, whether you're a brand or a retailer or a manufacturer, whatever it is, it's hard. And you should expect to work hard and have to have the business savvy to find your niche to succeed as a small business owner.
Let's go to commercial break. When we're going to come on back, we're now going to go focus on the states and looking at what new states are going to have cannabis-related ballot measures. being put up to vote. Very important. I've been following along with this quite a bit, and we're going to go and get to that real quick. I'm here again with Brian Barash, Vice President of Marketing and External Affairs and Deputy General Counsel at Dutchie. And, you know, it just go to Brian's point, if you are coming to the space, you get a license, then you know what? You might want to go and take a look at Dutchie to help out for modernizing cannabis retail with personalization AI across point of sale, e-commerce, and loyalty marketing with their Dutchie 2.0 platform. We are going to talk about that later on, but you can go to them, Dutchie.com, D-U-T-C-H-I-E.com to learn more. And we're back with more questions after this.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Brian Barash, the Vice President of Marketing and External Affairs and Deputy General Counsel at Dutchie. And just to preface from the break, you can go to business.dutchie.com to learn more about how Dutchie can help your dispensary thrive. Make sure to go ahead and go to that as we continue. And, of course, we're presented by the Buzz CRM. 500 tools to manage every aspect of your marketing. An all-in-one solution. Get your free trial today. Stop juggling those multiple marketing tools and ditch those expensive subscriptions. Get a free trial at thebuzzcrm.com, thebuzzcrm.com. Now, let's go on to the states. There are various six states right now with cannabis-related ballot measures. Let's go through them real quickly. Arkansas, voters will decide on amending their medical cannabis law, including personal cultivation, potential adult use legalization if federal descheduling occurs. Very important. Florida has Amendment 3 aiming to adult use cannabis, legalize it for adults 21 and over, allowing possession up to 3 ounces. Nebraska, 2 medical cannabis initiatives focused on legal protections for patients and regulating medical cannabis production and distribution. Measure 5 in North Dakota, asking voters whether to legalize adult use cannabis and including a regulated market for sales. South Dakota, Measure 29, revisits adult use cannabis legalization previously overturned after a 2020 vote. And in Oregon, Measure 119 focuses on cannabis workers' rights to organize under state law, unionization. So now, one of the most recent decisions we had when it comes to having new states light up for adult use was Ohio. And when you look at what the policy debate is right now and the rollout of Ohio getting it ready for adult use, Pennsylvania is also one area, because we know that on our Planting Seeds program that we host here on Cannabis Radio with Senator Cerise Street, we've been talking extensively about the fact that Senator Street is one of the writers of the bill to present towards Governor Josh Shapiro to sign to legalize an adult use for cannabis in Pennsylvania from medical, and to go that route. That we've had a lot of extensive conversations. I would implore people to go ahead and listen to Planting Seeds and find out more about what's been going on in Pennsylvania. It's been very active. We've been following along with that very extensively and very, you know, granularly, if you will. But I want to know, Brian, what do you think about how this will shape in these new ballot measures, the strategies of advocacy groups, industry stakeholders, especially states like Pennsylvania, are evaluating their own legalization paths. What do you say?
I mean, look, I think we've seen overall a march towards legalization and acceptance. I think we see overwhelming support across the country for these initiatives. We've had a few setbacks in, more conservative states. Typically, you know, we see that happening with an underfunded ballot question or a ballot question where they're able to find a wedge issue to get people to vote against legalization, even when they support it generally. That being said, you know, we're part of the Florida ballot question campaign. We've donated to it. We strongly are hoping and expecting that it will be successful. We know the majority of Florida voters want it. It is a 60% burden of votes to get into the Constitution. So that is a little bit of a tougher bar. But we did, you know, achieve that in Ohio. Ben, we were part of that effort too. Ohio becoming a more conservative state, but still spoke overwhelmingly to supporting recreational legalization. And we're seeing a very successful legalization effort there now, as stores are now finally selling adult use cannabis with the new regulations in place. So very excited about Ohio. We think Florida has a ton of potential. The Dakotas are very interesting. It'll be really interesting to see what happens there, with South Dakota having gone both ways on this question in the past and having it overturned once, as you mentioned. And North Dakota, you know, we'll see what voters do there. I think the non-ballot states are almost even more interesting, because we're running out of ballot states is the reality, right? So there's
right.
the next set of states that come online are going to have to be through legislation. We saw this recently in places like Maryland and Delaware. We're now, as you said, looking at Pennsylvania very closely. We've worked closely with Senator Street and Governor Shapiro. We're really optimistic about the chances of doing something in the next year there. We had Minnesota pass last year. It's really excited to see how that market rolls out. They just started their licensing process. We expect Minnesota to be a really strong market. And then, you know, you have places like the Carolinas where, you know, you see a strong impetus to at least get medical started.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And so there's a lot to be excited about. And we think a lot of this is going to happen. We're not going to win every fight. New Hampshire was down to the wire last year and just barely wasn't able to get something done.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of progress. I think we're going to continue to see progress. I think we're pretty close to, you know, widespread acceptance and legislatures just realizing that you have to do this, at least medical. I mean, I think medical is so popular.
Texas has at least a strain in terms of Charlotte's Web, which Florida had under Governor Rick Scott that was able to get passed. At least you get to that point somewhere. But it's like one of those things. And when it comes to Florida, I will say that I know the fact that one of the things that was a bit of a barrier for Florida is, I think, also the time just to go make that transition from 2020 to try to go and go to adult use after that. It's part where I think they need to go and see where medical was going to go and go and how it was going to work out. And the other thing, too, is the petitioner issues, because there was a petition issue that didn't make it to the 2020 ballot, as a matter of fact, because I know there were, you know, there were dueling petitions with, you know, Smart and Safe Florida, which has now been the one that's been held and propped up by the MSOs. The other one was in a different area, Regulate Florida, which, you know, it just, they kind of cancel each other out. But there's a lot of reasons why that happened, which I'm not going to get into, but at least you get to the point where we're going to get that 2/3 majority. And I believe, you know, if you just had people voting south of the I-4 corridor, if it's Tampa, Orlando, Daytona Beach, and go south, it will get 75% support. I believe that wholeheartedly. It is more of the panhandle, more of north and more northern Florida. That might be a little bit more of an issue, but I think this time it will make that turnaround. And
I'll tell you, I think those political divisions, we're seeing them lessen now, especially with President Trump coming out and supporting the question. That's been very visible on the campaign trail. Certainly the campaign is pushing that, and we're seeing that be a very responsive message for Republicans. They're very happy to see that their preferred presidential candidate is supportive, and it makes them, I think, feel more comfortable saying, like, well, I'm for this, but, you know, some of my party aren't. I think the president's support really makes it easier to say, okay, you know, I'm voting for this. My president agrees with me.
And I also feel like there's something about where, you know, and I've not been really amplified much, but I think when you had Robert F. Kennedy, who was also running as a candidate, and at some point had significant support, you know, throwing his support towards former President Trump and just seeing where, you know, in some of the areas when he wants to go and come across and looking for helping Americans with different, you know, finding different normalities to go and help themselves feel better, you know, changing the kind of the foods we eat, those kind of areas, I think that kind of support also comes from him. That also has moderated the stance that former President Trump has now. I think it also helps in the areas of him supporting cannabis legalization when it's brought to him.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that I think there's a lot of things that go into it with President Trump. I mean, I also think whatever your political leanings are, it's pretty clear he's very shrewd in understanding where the people are. And I think we who work closely in this industry and are closer to this issue, follow it closely. We all know. We know exactly where the people are. People are overwhelmingly in support of legalization. More people become supportive of it every day as, you know, their grandma takes it for glaucoma or their friend takes it for cancer treatment or, you know, the millions and millions of stories we've all heard of how this impacts people's daily lives. You know, that adds up and it creates more believers.
And the campaign for Smart and Safe Florida, I can tell you, and for also a very conservative state like Florida, you know, you look at what the ads have been, it's been a lot of senior citizens advocating and also law enforcement also putting their support towards it. Various civil law enforcement agents also going on and first responders talking about the benefits of cannabis because they're seeing it from a medicinal standpoint, bring more access out there, let people go and grow it, let people have a chance to go and use it. That's where it's a resonating message, and I think that gets across. And that's in a much tougher environment to put that message across, as you would say, other states. But now, moving along now, in for states right now, if we looked at, if it's not legalization from a federal standpoint, whether it's a States Act or a MORE Act or what it could be, the Safe Banking Act we've talked about, mixed reception among legislators, especially even within traditional supportive states like Ohio. But, you know, for Dutchie itself, if there's hurdles when you see advancing federal cannabis making reforms, I actually talked to someone about the area where, you know, while we're waiting for any kind of relief, you know, we have various financial-based institutions that are servicing the cannabis industry itself and making a lot of changes to just do what they can to go and continue to just offer information, offer banking services, lending, and various other, you know, ways of loaning and just offering, you know, solutions out there for companies to go and continue to have safety and security to go and run their businesses, have the finance they need, those areas. But now for Dutchie, you know, supporting states with emerging markets, you know, does a Safe Banking Act or anything right now, the hurdles that you see from the cannabis banking and investment sector, how does that impact Dutchie's efforts to support dispensaries and states with emerging markets?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, it's something we think about all the time. You know, we are a full-scale technology solution, right? And we just came out with Dutchie 2.0. We've been expanding our platform. We've been looking very closely at banking and investing, and particularly for us at payments and how you know, are able to support businesses that are heavily focused on cash, that have had serious issues with crime, that, you know, struggle to even get a bank account, never mind being able to process consumer payments. And, you know, it's a very difficult situation for them to be in. I do think we need to pass the Safe Banking Act to support more options for them. But at the same time, like you said, you know, hope is not a plan. We need to create a plan to help people succeed right now. And so one of the things Dutchie has invested, just announced as part of our Dutchie 2.0, our largest release ever, is something we call Pay by Bank. And our Pay by Bank platform is powered by Plaid, which is the largest, you know, one of the largest financial, you know, fintech companies that exists in the country. They've, you know, started a Keystone partnership with us to create a bank-linked product that consumers can actually use and can trust because they know the name Plaid and can easily link their bank account and pay, have it remembered, pay every time they come. It's very easy to use online. We're trying to get creative to make it something that's a more consumer-friendly process to go through in-store. Because, look, there's a reality. Consumers walk into a store, they expect to tap a card now, right? They're not used to having to block cash. They're certainly not used to having to do something else with their phone to make a payment. And so it's about creating a consumer-friendly process for them to actually go through and be able to make an efficient purchase. And we're working on it every day. We think we've made a lot of progress there. And I'd say stay tuned because we have some even more exciting things coming there in the future. I mean, you know, you look at, there are models. You look at, you know, your Dunkin' Donuts, your Starbucks app. You know that there's ways to get consumers to change their purchasing behavior. And we're trying to bring those modern solutions to the cannabis industry.
So while we're going to go to the table, the discussion where we look at this, what federal and state policy changes might come to the forefront that will help, you know, to help expand the cannabis industry and help to support the cannabis industry. We're going to go move along into what, in the meantime, if that's not going to be something we can look at right now, what can we be doing in the meantime? What is it that we should be doing while we're still on the on road? You know, we are waiting to get to that launch pad to go and go to legalization or to get some financial or banking help from Congress or D.C. to go and help us with that. We're going to talk about how Dutchie 2.0 helps out to in that in many respects. We're going to talk about that and what you do in terms of what you're talking about, what we should be doing to help police ourselves in terms of compliance, in terms of, you know, helping ourselves to move forward and continue to grow this industry as a whole. Again, here with Brian Barash, VP of Marketing and External Affairs and Deputy General Counsel at Dutchy. And we've been talking about Dutchy 2.0 a little bit here on the program. We're going to talk more about it after the break, but also look at the website and go to business.dutchy, D-U-T-C-H-I-E.com, and learn more as we go to break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
I'm back with final questions with Brian Barash, VP of Marketing and External Affairs and Deputy General Counsel at Dutchy. And Brian, thanks for being on with me to go and talk about all these different issues when it comes to politics. And I guess it was nice to go and keep it so just informational, no biases, part that this makes. It's like, you know, we know that on various sides of the aisle, there is support for cannabis. And we just need to now see, now that we've laid out the framework, let's see what actually happens, who goes into office from the, not just the presidential level, but also state and house levels, and see if there's something that happens where we get to some point in Congress where we can see bills that have already been presented and proposed and have been written, see if they come to fruition. Because it's all there. We're just waiting for somebody to go ahead and pull the green light and say, okay, let's put it up for a vote and let somebody sign it. It's all we're waiting for right now at this point. But now, let's go and get into what would be beneficial for Dutchy going forward as we're doing this. Because right now, you're looking to go ahead and if there's anything right now that you could hope for coming in November that, or for after Election Day, that would be beneficial for expansion for Dutchy and the wider digital infrastructure for cannabis retail that can happen right away. What would rescheduling do for you right away once that's finalized?
Honestly, the biggest thing it does for us, this is, I know something every company says, but we really try and work hard to make our company ethos. It's customer first, right? So our customers are the license holders. They're the ones who pay the 280E tax. One of the most immediate things it does is it removes that tax burden for these companies, which has a myriad of benefits for the industry. You know, I think it's important to remember the folks who are hardest hit by something like 280E are your mom and pops, your small business owners. You know, you don't have a safety net or a debt restructure that's going to save you or allow you to operate for a few more years. You're looking at your book and saying, am I going to survive this year, right? And so we've heard this numerous times from our customers. 280E is critical for our customers to survive and for our customers to expand and grow successful, profitable businesses. And that's why we're in that fight, because it supports our customers' ability to thrive. And a thriving industry, you know, it's a rising tide lifts all boats, no question about it. And, you know, there's problems that aren't related to federal legalization that our industry is struggling with right now, right? We're seeing decreased margins. We're seeing a race to the bottom and price competition and over discounting and more competition from the illicit market, from intoxicating hemp. Our folks are being squeezed from all directions and they feel that pain. And one of the things we're trying to do is give them modern tools to get through those issues, to have a personalized consumer journey that creates consumer loyalty to your store and keep them coming back. Ways to increase your profit margins by selling a product that's not just the cheapest one with the highest THC percentage, but is actually, you're able to differentiate products. You're able to get people to have some brand recognition, to value a product that they've liked before and keep coming back for, even if it's not the cheapest one on the shelf, right? And as you pointed out, investing in compliance, right? And part of that is efficiency, so that you're not wasting hours trying to do inventory reconciliation and are instead having a smooth process, a modern process to just, you know, click scan things in and be able to efficiently manage your compliance, whether that's through, you know, something like Lucid or Metric Retail ID or a bunch of other technologies that are out there that are helping, create this compliance efficiency and compliance certainty. So, we're involved in all those pieces of the puzzle.
So with Dutchy 2.0, let's go and talk about what you have been doing in terms of Dutchy, in terms of the process of helping the dispensaries and retailers to, you know, create a more optimized experience. And again, help elevate customer experience, drive revenue growth, and optimize operations, as the CEO, Tim Barash, has already said about this, and understanding the challenges of today's market. Now, machine learning's been integrated to understand customer preferences. Industry 2.0, enabling dispensaries to tailor online and in-store experiences to each individual, SEO optimized and custom branded e-commerce experience, a 360-degree mobile first reporting engine, and also empowering effortless marketing and loyalty, cashless payments integrated into online marketing. And one of the things that I'll look at is that, you know, in the streamlining operations, what was one of the important points I wanted to take from the components of what Dungy 2.0 does, because we talked about compliance. And on this program, maybe every other show or so, or every couple of shows, compliance is going to come into the forefront, because I'm going to say, until legalization comes into play, we have to self-police ourselves as an industry. Compliance needs to be above and beyond, even what the state recommended compliance standards are. And if it's GMP, which we know is much more expensive, but, you know, when I talk to legal counsel, when I talk to various people, and I'm sure from your own legal experience, you know, if you can reach GMP, one of the things that what Dungy 2.0 does is that you're freeing up time to focusing on, you know, for exceptional customer service, building meaningful connections, and it's simplifying and automating critical tasks like inventory management, order fulfillment, and compliance reporting. So in that area, that's obviously what you're trying to go ahead and make sure to handle for that. And also you have partner integrations, like you said, with Metric, Retail ID, Lucid ID, complementing with partners like Alpine IQ, SpringBrig, and others. So compliance is important, and that's something that's been to the forefront of the new platform, along with the AI integrated components you brought into it. But when you did talk to customers that have Dungy and are going to bring Dungy 2.0 into their fold, you know, what do you tell them about what level of compliance they should be in? How do you advise in that respect?
Yeah, it's really critical. I think, you know, this is particularly difficult in new markets, especially with smaller operators who haven't done it before. They don't understand the compliance burden. They don't understand the risk they could put themselves at if they play fast and loose. And even seeing someone try and launch a store, you know, on pen and paper and then transition to our platform. And, you know, you see all kinds of things as some of these markets take off the ground. So, you know, I lead our compliance team. It's absolutely critical. We consider ourselves compliance software first and foremost. And there's a reason for that, right? I mean, you put your license at risk. You will not be able to sell cannabis if you are not compliant and following the letter of the law. And you're going to lose consumer trust if you're not following the spirit of the law and providing products that people can trust, that have consistency, that, you know, don't have mold in them, that are tested correctly, right? So compliance is at the heart of everything we do. It's also how we build trust, how we actually get that policy progress we've been talking about, right? One or two horrible stories about, you know, a bad contamination event could set us all back. So compliance is at the heart of everything we do. You know, it even keeps the black market at bay if people aren't, you know, being non-compliant and selling products in places they shouldn't be. So I think all of this comes back to how are we able to support that? And, you know, one of the things I think people don't realize is there's a lot of compliance buzzwords in this space. Like everyone says like, oh, this is this thing compliant, that thing compliant, right? But what does that actually mean? Ask your software provider, do you have experience working with numerous shops for a number of years in our market with our set of regulations? Is your compliance integration with something like a Metric or a BioTrack? Is it the most basic version where we still have to go into Metric or BioTrack to do manual reconciliation and manually handle things like recalls and all that kind of stuff? Or is it automating the entire process for me? So it's easy to say we're compliant. It's a lot harder to do that day-to-day work.
Right.
To make more of that efficient and effective and protected for you. And that's why Dungy, we have three compliance experts, each of which lit up every market that we're in. We have for every market an expert who studies that market's laws, who's in touch with that market's regulators, and is able to both respond specifically to policy issues and help shape the policies that come out next from these regulators, which we consider a critical advantage for us.
One of the things we notice with compliance, and listen, I mean, it's not like we get a whole lot of reports. I think it's been much better where you might see in Nevada, there's a couple different strains. They say that there's something with some contamination, pesticides, various different, you know, foreign subjects or objects you're finding or subjects that really are matter that are in the strains themselves. Colorado and Nevada have had those issues from the last couple of years or so. But When it comes to what you have in terms of your compliance experts and what you're doing, where Dutchie's really helping to go ahead and free up so much time to me, I believe, would be to go ahead and help work on compliance on top of that, optimizing workflows, reducing errors, improving productivity overall. But in those areas, you know, if there are people that are trying to go ahead and do what's necessary to go ahead and, you know, well, really, how much productivity do you increase and how much streamlines operations so that compliance can be more of an issue? I mean, when you look at what Dutchie 2.0 is going to be able to do, or Dutchie has been doing in general for years, you know, what is it do you say that would be, why it's so important to have Dutchie, you know, in the fold as your seed-to-sale process so that you can make the room for that compliance that is so critical? And, you know, what level of compliance would be at least the bare minimum in your opinion, or what your experts would advise? I mean, if GMP is, would GMP be ultimately, you know, a right barrier to entry, or as close as you can get to it, what would you say would be the best area to go and say, what's the best you could do to try to become compliant to stay above and beyond?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. I mean, I think, what set of standards we settle on as a cannabis industry is something that has been in discussion for a while. I think, as you've kind of pointed out, you know, keeping ourselves to a higher standard, there's been a lot of discussions about, you know, as an industry, do we have a set of, you know, self-regulating principles? You know, many other industries have that, whether that's, you know, the wireless carriers or others that have their own set of standards that they put in place in order to keep government from setting standards that they didn't think were going to be fair. So, you know, do we put our own standards in place? I think that's an interesting question. But wherever it lands, I think one of the most important things is getting that buy-in from states. And there's great organizations like CANRA, which is a regulators association that all the different state regulators belong to, that are starting to promote those conversations that I think are going to be an important voice in helping states get on the same page. I mean, you know, one of the things we've seen is states can't even agree on one of Nathan's. And in Ohio, they use tenths, you know, so it's, you have these different standards of even measuring products and measuring purchase limits and things across states. And it makes it very difficult for a multi-state operator to manage compliance across different states. And so one of the things I think is critical is starting to foster that conversation of how do we create standards that work across states? How do we get states to agree on what is a reasonable standard to follow so that we can have some common processes and tighten up our compliance and not have mistakes that are caused out of, you know, confusion or intricacy of state-by-state compliance? You know, we consider ourselves experts at that. We help our customers navigate it, but we also want it to be easier for them so they can focus on what they're good at, which is providing, you know, customers with safe and easy access to cannabis that helps them, whether it's medically or recreationally.
So the thing is, you know, and I will keep saying, and I know it's going to be hard for companies to go ahead and be able to go and reach a level of compliance. I mean, I look at, we're in Vermont, the Cannabis Control Board right there is looking to go ahead and work more on compliance and trying to go and build up what they're asking for in terms of aeration or various, you know, cultivation issues to make sure that there's less risk, more licensees stay compliant. I look at even just in Europe, they have their own compliance standard, which is the EU GXP compliance standard. I never know about that, but it's a European Medicines Agency regulations and guidelines are good practices as well. And, you know, it's like, I know it costs a lot of money to it, but for those, if they listen to me, listen on this Blunt Business program on a regular basis, and they're saying to themselves, you know, Brian, we want to get to what he's talking about. You know, when we talk about compliance, that GMP standard, you know, if we can get there, it's a money issue. It's, you know, a productivity issue. It's a lot of things coming into play. How close could Dutchie 2.0 get clients or get customers to that level if they're trying to reach that? And is that ultimately where people should try to strive to be?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a good question. I think it really does require some standardization. I think it's very difficult to reach that level alone, right? You need a supply chain that's all working on the same standard. You need retailers being able to buy from distributors who are working with products, who are working with growers, you know, that are all on the same page about this stuff. But I do think there are some companies that are doing some great work to achieve this. I mean, I already mentioned before, you know, Lucid and Metric and others that are trying to make strides in this direction, trying to modernize the way that that works. And, you know, Dutchie works with both of those companies and is able to support that. But frankly, like one of the biggest things that Dutchie 2.0 is bringing to people and that we're focused on is the consumer journey and how you're able to navigate, you know, providing consumers a modern cannabis experience, both online and in store. Because look, you don't go to Amazon and have never bought a bicycle and see you know, product ads for bicycles all over the top of your front page, right? Amazon and our modern shopping experience, people know what we buy. People, we like to see stuff that's relevant to us when we go to sites that we visit. And so that's a big part of what Dutchie 2.0 is bringing, is that modern retail experience, so that when you go to a Dutchie dispensary's West store and you usually buy gummies, you're going to see gummies. And when you come in store and you show your ID and then you get to the counter, they're not going to say like, hey, did you forget to buy a pre-roll if you've never bought a pre-roll? They're going to say, did you see we have these gummies on discount? We know you like gummy discounts. So it's about providing that personalized experience to people so they can get what they're looking for.
Yeah, it's definitely helping in that area where there might be budsitters that might not be able to go and give the kind of guidance or advice as to what to buy. Also, the machine learning to help. You know, I can't tell how many times I've bought various products because machine learning is being used on us. The algorithms are learning about what our buying habits are. Why not use it? And it's something like Dutchie 2.0. And one of the other areas I'm talking about when it comes to compliance is, you know, if you want banking in the meantime, you know, credit unions out there, they are looking into risk management and compliance. You know, they're looking at regulations, assessing risks, the compliance strategies. And then that will, you know, if they're finding companies that want to go and come in, ask for lending, ask for help, and you'll be able to go and open up accounts, they want to know that you have compliance. They want to know that in their resume, a Dutchie 2.0 would be probably a benefit, you know, than anything else to help you get to levels like that. So the thing is, compliance leads, opens doors to so many other things, and also keeps away, you're also ahead of the game for when that ramp up to legalization, however it's going to be structured, whether it's in your state or whether it's from a federal level, compliance is important. And I want to make sure to point that, and I will keep thumping that word at everybody on this program until we get all companies to go above and beyond the call of duty. So that's where I'm at with that.
And I will say, you know, Dutchie is SOC 1 and SOC 2 compliant. You know, we go through, you know, that's for the layman, that's looking at auditing your financial controls and your technical controls, right? So whether it's talking to your bank about what you should be able to get an account and how trustworthy your financials are, or you're a large public company who has to file SOX reports, you know, Dutchie is able to meet your needs and be a trustworthy partner on that front.
But in the meantime, until you get to that point, you can also know that with, you have the pay by bank feature again, powered by Plaid, integrating into Dutchie's e-commerce kiosk mobile app, unlocking cashless payments, dramatically more usage and engagement than legacy ACH solutions. But still, it's all part of the whole facet of trying to create and continue to grow, get cannabis businesses one by one. So that's how we're going to go with that. Brian, thanks for being on with me. I really appreciate you taking the hour with me to talk about it. We had a whole lot of ground to cover, but we got through it. And, you know, finally, we took in some time about Dutchie 2.0, but for those that want to go ahead and look at this, we've talked about it. They're obviously interested. How should listeners go ahead and go to learn more, and what should they be doing right away?
Yeah, go to business.dutchie.com, book a demo. We have an email address right on the front page. You can't miss it. Give us your email. We'll get in touch, and we'll hook you up with one of our experts to give you a formal demo. And that's true whether you're someone who's new and looking to buy Dutchie for the first time, or you're an existing customer, you just want to see what's new. Come in, let's have that conversation. We want to make sure that you're using the tools to maximize the potential of your dispensary.
Beginning here with Brian Barish, VP of Marketing and External Affairs and Deputy General Counsel at Dutchie. Brian, thanks for being on with us. Really appreciate it. And let's go and do this again sometime soon. Let's hope that everything in the election goes to fruition and we get some really great positive news coming out into November.
Hopefully we're having a great conversation next time, Ray.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, listeners. Appreciate all of you listening in and finding the program. And we'll talk to you next time. We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.